All right, morning everyone. Today's daf in Yuma's paid Dalet 84. Just a couple more, several more days to go before we finish the Masechta. Masechta takes us back to the to Peches 88. So that makes it 4 days. If you want to include today's daf, 5 days. Okay. Deeply appreciate the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. The daf will be learned with Zecher Nishmas Lower Zaltzman Lupin. The Gemara, we're on Pei Gimel. We're behind. We're in Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. We're on the bottom of the Amud, and we're starting a basic discussion over the course of today, tomorrow. Might even spill into Sunday a little bit. And that is saving your life. Even in the event that you're going to have to violate Isurim. Now, this discussion was prompted because the Mishnah earlier, I'm back on Pei Beis, already back on 82, the Mishnah mentioned that on Yom Kippur, if somebody is suffering because of the fasting, and not just suffering, but really in critical condition, so then they're allowed to eat. The Mishnah's example back on Pei Beis was that of a woman who's pregnant, who's in a very delicate and fragile state, and she has a craving, and she needs to eat, and it's absolutely necessary, and it's for her survival. So the Mishnah says she eats. That goes without saying. We had a discussion over the course of Pei Beis and on Pei Gimel as well. What if there's a discrepancy of opinion between doctors, between her and the doctor, between her and a group of doctors? But when all said and done, I mean, basically the opinion that we landed on at the end of the discussion was, if anyone is of the opinion, herself included, that this is a critical condition and that she needs to eat, so then she has the full right, and not only the right, but the obligation to eat so that she could preserve her life, the preservation of life. The Gemara over the course of Pei Beis pointed out that there are three exceptions to this rule, where we don't put life as the paramount, but we put Yisurim above life, and those are by the Gimel Chamur, so those are by the three cardinal sins of Gilu Arash, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah, where they go over life, they're placed on top of life. So if given the choice of Gilu Arash, Shvichas Damim, or Avodah Zarah over your own life, so then you have to go with the three over your own life. But short of that, you put your life first, V'chai Bahem. The Mishnah, then we went through the Mishnah on Pei Gimel, Amud Aleph. The Mishnah speaks about, not just on Yom Kippur are you allowed to eat, but in general, if you are suffering from what the Mishnah referred to as a condition as bulmus. Short conversations with our cardiology team over here, and could be some form of hypoglycemia, but I'm certainly not qualified to render any type of really intelligent opinion. But in other words, it's a condition. It's a very serious condition where he needs to eat. So the Mishnah says he, in the event that you don't have kosher food, so eat not kosher food. And in other words, again, you were talking about machalos asuros, forbidden foods. So if your life is in the balance and you don't have and you don't have available to you kosher food, so you eat non kosher food. That's the basic point of the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah went on to say, in Shabbos as well, Shabbos, if somebody's life is in jeopardy, so you do whatever you need to do on Shabbos in order to preserve the person's life. Even if you're not sure that your efforts are going to actually be life saving, the Mishnah says it doesn't matter. You go ahead and you make every attempt on Shabbos to preserve life. That discussion about the violation of Shabbos to make sure that people to care for people and to ensure that they're going to live. So that discussion will continue throughout today's daf. Meaning, Pei Dalid is really the dedication to that topic of being Mechal Shabbos to save somebody's life. We are in Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. We're going to continue where we left off yesterday. The Tana Rabbanan. We're going to start straight from the Gemara. Okay. On Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. Tana Rabbanan. Minayin ha'yuyodin she'iru einav mi shiyavchin bein tov l'ra. Minayin ha'yuyodin, how do they know? Meaning the Mishnah says, if you go back to the Mishnah, Mishach Zobomos, if somebody is suffering from this Bomos, from this condition, from this very serious condition, from this critical condition, so the Mishnah said, so I feel it you feed him even foods that are not kosher, ad sheyeiru einav, until his eyes are, quote-unquote, enlightened. So what does that mean? I mean enlightened more literally than figuratively. So the Gemara says, "Minayna yiyod nisheir einav, mishiyav chimein tov l'ra." So the Gemara says he gets his discernibility back. I don't know if that's a good word, but in other words, he's able to make distinctions. The Gemara says, "Amar Abaye v'tayma," and Abaye says, "In terms of taste, meaning he's able to taste food again, and that's good food, and that's not good food, and when he that's the point of revival, and that's the point where okay, we're good, meaning well, you could stop feeding him non-kosher food." Okay, so now the Gemara is going to give us a rule, a general rule, and that is the following. We learned in the Mishnah that if somebody is in critical condition and he needs to eat, and there's no kosher food available, so you give him non-kosher food. Okay. What the Gemara now is basically going to introduce us to is, even when you're giving him non-kosher food, so take the following into consideration. Know what you're feeding him. If there's a choice between something which is prohibited versus something which is more prohibited, give him the less prohibited food. In other words, basically, what the Gemara is going to introduce us to is this idea that we should try to mitigate the Isser as much as we can. In other words, take into consideration that we're giving him non-kosher food, we must give him non-kosher food in order for him to survive, but if we can, let's mitigate the amount of Isser that we're going to expose him to. So for example, the Gemara is going to give a number of examples. Machin also akal akal. So for example, tevel v'nevela, machin also nevela. So let's say it's a choice between tevel and nevela. Tevel is non-tithed produce. Nevela is an animal that wasn't shechted. Okay, which one is worse? So which one is worse? Tevel's worse. Eating tevel's mitzvah bidei shamayim. Death by the hands of heaven. Nevela is a lav. It's malchus. Misa is a greater punishment, which indicates that the prohibition is a greater prohibition. And therefore, nevela, no question. So, you know, give him a burger from your one of your local franchise establishments. That's nevela. Rather than giving him tevel. Tevel v'shvi'is. Now, let's say the choices are as follows. I have two foods. One is tevel, that's untithed produce. And the other one is shvi'is. So shvi'is is produce in Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year, after the point of biur. We've learned already a number of times together that in the Shemitah year, there's a point where the produce is no longer available in the field, at which point in time there's now a mitzvah of biur. There is I'll just simply translate it as we have to destroy the produce. Now that's not an accurate translation. Not everyone agrees to the translation I just provided. But in other words, the basic idea is it is prohibited to eat the produce after the Zman HaBiur, let's just leave it at that because it can get more involved. Now, tevel again is mitzvah b'dei shamayim. Eating produce in the Shemitah year that grew during the Shemitah year after the Shas Biur is a positive commandment. Meaning, it's not a positive commandment. You're not allowed to eat it. It's a negative prohibition stemming from a positive commandment. Meaning, what does the Torah say? That after the Shas Biur, you must destroy the fruit. Okay. Now, if you have to destroy it, that means that you can't eat it. So it is what we call an aseh elav haba michlal aseh. It's a negative prohibition, but emanating from the positive commandment. So what do I have over here? What are my two choices? Either mitzvah b'dei shamayim or an aseh. So again, no brainer. Tevel shvi'is, shvi'is. So you feed him shvi'is. Shvi'is is only an aseh. Tevel is mitzvah b'dei shamayim. Tevel utruma. Here we get to a tricky one. Let's say your two choices of feeding him are either tevel or truma. Now, again, let's go over definitions. Tevel is any produce that's not tithed. Truma is produce which was tithed, and we're talking specifically about the portion, generally it's 2%, that goes to a kohen. That's truma. A non-kohen eating truma, what's the punishment for doing so? Misa bidei shamayim. So we have now in front of us the two choices, and they seem to be pretty much equal with one another. Tevel, whose punishment for eating it is mitzvah b'dei shamayim, and truma, whose punishment for a non-kohen to eat it is mitzvah b'dei shamayim. So now it sounds like we're discussing, and I mean this literally, oranges and oranges, meaning we are discussing really two foods which halachically are the same. So if there's a choice between feeding either tevel or truma, is there a right choice to make? Meaning, is there a food with a lesser prohibition? Tanaihi. So here the Gemara says, this is a really tough call, and the Gemara says, not only is it a tough call, it's subject to a machlokas amongst tonight. The Tanya machin also tevel, v'amichin machin also truma. The Tanakhama says, feed him tevel, don't feed him truma. Truma is a greater iser, so therefore feed him tevel. And Bentema omer truma v'lo tevel. And Bentema goes the other direction. Bentema says, no, feed him truma, and not tevel. Meaning tevel is a greater prohibition, and so therefore feed him truma. Amar Rabba, hechadav shebechul and dekol amalo pligi dematakin lay masvin alay. So a rabba makes a statement which at first, and the Gemara is going to note this in just a moment, which at first sounds so obvious. Rabba says, well, you know, if by the tevel you could separate trumas and maisros, so that's the best thing to do. Which the Gemara later on is going to declare, well, of course. What do you mean that's the best thing to do? Obviously, if you could separate trumas and maisros and take away the status of tevel and allow the food to be eaten in the state of chulin, obviously that's okay. Obviously, that's the best thing to do. So, okay, the Gemara later on will try to understand, like, what's Rabbi even saying? It's so obvious. So, ki pligi b'dolo efshar b'chulin. So the Gemara says, we're talking about a scenario where I can't turn the tevel into chulin. I can't separate trumas and maisos for whatever reason. Mar sefer tevel chover, mar sefer truma chamura. And then the Gemara just simply articulates, which we basically already knew, which is that the debate over here between the Tanakhama and Bentema, it's what's worse, what's a greater isser? Tevel versus truma. So the Gemara goes and gives us varos. The Gemara gives us actual arguments. Mar sefer tevel chamur, aval truma, chazil kohen. Now to say the argument, now again, both of them are the same punishment, misa b'dei shamayim. So we have to come up with another argument why one is worse than the other. So the Gemara says, so here's the argument that tevel's worse. Why is tevel worse? Because at least truma can be eaten by somebody, i.e. a kohen. Tevel can be eaten by nobody. So on one hand, tevel's worse because there literally can be no current consumer of the tevel. Masha'inkin, when it comes to truma, although you, the non-kohen, can't eat it, but right now, currently, the kohen could eat it. So that's an argument that tevel is worse. Mar sefer truma chamura vel tevel asher litkune. Or on the other hand, you can make the following argument. Truma for the non-kohen will forever be forbidden. Tevel, at least potentially, is edible. I have to be misaken, I have to correct it, I have to take off trumas and maestros, but at least there's a potential where I can eat the tevel. But when it comes to truma, I can never eat the truma, so that's an argument that truma is worse. Okay, so the Gemara says we have arguments. Now, Efsha Bechulin, top of Pegim Omid Beis. Efsha Bechulin Pshita. Now, the Gemara goes back to Rabba's first statement. Now, Rabba's first statement was really a no-brainer. In fact, the Gemara now is bothered by that. Rabba says, well, if I have tevel, and I could take off trumas and maestros, that's the best. Of course, that's the best. How can you even argue with such a statement? The Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about on Shabbos. Oh. So now the Gemara is introducing a new wrinkle in this discussion, a new layer in this discussion. And that is the following. I have now in front of me, and again, the starting point for this whole discussion is a person is suffering from bulimia. He needs to eat. And right now he's in a situation where we have no kosher food, so now basically we have to choose. And our choices right now are either truma or tevel. Okay. Now, what the Gemara is suggesting is, not suggesting, but introducing us to is that this question now is coming up specifically on Shabbos. So now on Shabbos, here's my choices. My choices are either truma or tevel. And what Rabba is saying is, well, you know, on Shabbos, take the tevel and separate truma from maisos. Okay, that's what Rav is suggesting to us. To which let me just make one other point, which is important for this discussion. On Shabbos, are you allowed to take off trumas and maisos? So the answer is no, but that's rabbinically prohibited. That's not a biblical prohibition. It looks like you're fixing something on Shabbos. I mean, it's not a real tikkun mana. It's not a real. You're not really fixing an item, but nevertheless, once you take off trumas and maisos, you're now allowing the rest of the food to be eaten. So it looks like a correction. It's nirik and misakin. It looks like you're fixing. So therefore, the rabbis prohibited the separation of trumas and maisos on Shabbos. So now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that's what Rabba means. Rabba means that if on Shabbos you have tevel, so you'll take off trumas and maisos. Okay. The Gemara says pshita. That too is obvious. Tiltul midrabbanan, because what are we talking about? We're talking about tiltul midrabbanan, meaning the separation of trumas and maisos on Shabbos is only an issur derabbanan. So wouldn't we prefer to violate an issur derabbanan rather than to violate an issur d'oraisa? Eating tevel is an issur d'oraisa. Right now, the person has to eat. So now, let's give him the choice. You can either eat in its current state, which is an issur d'oraisa, or violate Shabbos, by separating Trumas and Maestros, but that violation is only Nisa Durabanan, and now you're left, you put him in a position where he doesn't have to eat non-kosher at all. That too, says the Gemara, is obvious. So Pshita told him Durabanan, Durabanan. So the Gemara says, so we are another layer to the discussion. The Gemara says that we're talking about where the produce in question was not grown in the ground, nor was it grown in a pot with perforations, which is basically the same thing as growing in the ground, but rather we're talking about where the produce that was grown was grown in a pot, not connected to the ground. And so therefore, it didn't receive its sustenance from the ground, and even if you grow it in Israel, it's not obligated in Shumas HaMaisos Midda Araisa. It's only obligated in Shumas and Maestros Midrabanan. And so now the Gemara is saying this is where the Chiddush is invoked. Now Rav is saying something. Because let's think this through. The person has to eat right now. All we have available for him to eat is non-tithe produce, Tevel, or Truma. Those are my two choices. So now we'll say, okay, take off the Trumas and Maestros, off the Tevel. And so allow the person to eat now totally corrected and totally kosher food. What's the issue? Well, the Gemara says no. In this particular scenario, it's Shabbos, so that's a rabbinic prohibition to take off Trumas and Maestros. And furthermore, the produce in question didn't grow in the ground; it only grew in a pot. That means that on a Torah level, it's not obligated in Trumas and Maestros. It's only obligated in Trumas and Maestros on a Derabbanan level. So, meaning to say that even if I eat it as is, I'm still only violating an Issa Derabbanan, not an Issa Daraisa. So now the question, it's a sharper question, it's an edgier question. Now the question is, should I violate one Issa Derabbanan, when that is to separate Shumas and Maestros on Shabbos, or should I violate another Derabbanan, which is, eat the Tevel as it is. Again, this is produce not grown in the ground, but grown in a pot. And therefore, it's an obligation to separate Trumas and Maestros. It's not Daraisa, only Derabbanan. Eat it as it is, even though I will be eating Tevel Midrabbanan, but at least I won't be separating Trumas and Maestros on Shabbos, which is an Issa Derabbanan. That's the question. Now it becomes a sharper question. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, and now that's what it comes down to. Meaning what it comes down to now is, should I eat Tevel? And again, this is only Tevel Midrabbanan, or should I eat the Truma? And again, we'll go back to the arguments that we made in terms of which one's worse. Okay. Lematanahi. The Gemara is suggesting, well, perhaps this debate that we're seeing right now between the Tanakama and Bentema could really be reflective of another debate. So Lematanahi, the time we learned in the Braisa, Mishanashcho Nachash. So let's say a person gets bit by a snake and he's in critical condition, bitten by a venomous snake. So basically, whatever you need to do to preserve the person's life, you take him around from one place to another to try to find him the right doctor. You tear open a chicken, right? I'm not really sure how that. Okay, whatever. It's some form of medicine against the venom. It goes in low secretion. If you need to cut leaks from the ground, you do so. And you feed him on Shabbos. And Rebbe says, and don't take off Trumas and Maestros. Meaning, he needs to eat right now. You feed him whatever you need to feed him. And don't take off Trumas and Maestros. And again, we're talking about where it's on Shabbos. And Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, Amar lo yechad she'aser. And Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon says, no, take off Trumas and Maestros. Okay. Neima. Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon, he, Velo Rebbe. And so the Gemara now is suggesting, okay, so what do you see? So Rebbe says, don't take off Trumas and Maestros. And wasn't Rabba arguing, you should take off Trumas and Maestros? So the Gemara says, no. Afilu tema Rebbe. Ad kan lo kama Rebbe hasam alalini and Maestro Yerik Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, no. Rebbe says, in that particular case, let's not take off Trumas and Maestros. Why not? We're talking about vegetables, right? Krishim. Now, vegetables are not obligated in Trumas and Maestros, min haTorah. But nevertheless, mid derabbanan, rabbinically, the rabbis legislated that we take off Trumas and Maestros from vegetables. But it's not a din deraisa, and it never will be a din deraisa. But if we're talking about grains, which was what Rabba was talking about, but Rabba was talking about grains that were grown in a pot, not perforated. But there, the grain itself could be subject to a din da araisa. But meister dung at the tevel da araisa hu. Afilu Rebbe Modidi, Shar Slei Batsu Sheino Nakov, Asla Mechu Batsu Shu Nakov. So the Gemara draws the following distinction. When it comes to vegetables, vegetables are never chayv min haTorah. It is only rabbinic. I say only in this case relative. In relative terms, it is only a rabbinic prohibition, so therefore, let's waive it. The person is in critical condition, he needs to eat, we're violating Shabbos, let's waive the hafrasha requirement. Anyway, that its hafrasha is only midrabana, not midaraisa. However, in the case where we're talking about grain, and even though the grain that we're talking about happens to have been grown in a pot that's not perforated, but there, that grain, although it is not obligated in a Torah to take off Trumas and Maisos, in another scenario, it could be. Meaning, if instead of growing in the pot, it grew in the ground. Or if the pot was perforated, then there would be an obligation to take off Trumas and Maisos min Torah. So that's basically what the Gemara is saying is that's a stronger Dirabbanan. That's a Dirabbanan that's much closer to a Daraisa. So there, what Rabbi's telling you is that if you could be Mafish, Trumas and Maestros, you for sure should be Mafish in such a scenario, Trumas and Maestros. Okay. Period. At this stage of the Gemara. So basically now, the argument that the Gemara is introducing us to is the following. Let's just quickly summarize the last 20 lines of Gemara. That if a person needs food and needs to eat and there's no kosher food available, so you give him non-kosher food, his condition's in critical condition, give him non-kosher food, and the only thing that you should do is consider to mitigate the amount of isur he's exposed to, always give him the lesser of the isurim. And then the Gemara spent last 15 lines of Gemara discussing a scenario where, let's say, the two isurim are basically on par with one another, like the choice between Truma versus Tevel, where basically it's the same punishment, both of them are Misa B'dei Shamayim, and so therefore, we are, in that case, going to split a hair, meaning which one is better, is it better to give him Truma, or is it better to give him Tevel? So that was debated between the Tanaim. Rabbah then qualified the Machlokas between the Tanaim, and then the Gemara further discussed the qualification of Rabbah. Okay, continuing on, Tanur Rabbanan. Bottom line is, you feed him, in that particular scenario, between Truma versus Tevel, so I don't know. Okay, that's fair. I mean, the Gemara spent last time debating, and I don't know, right. But again, though, remember, just to be clear, even in the debate of the Gemara, when it's not Shabbos, then it's a no-brainer. Then you separate Trumas and Maestros, and then you just give him the Chulin. But on Shabbos, now there's a consideration that you're not allowed to take off Shumas and Maisos on Shabbos. You're violating an Issa Durabban. Okay, that takes us to where we are in the Gemara now. Tanur Rabban, Misha Achso Bomos Machin Oso Devash. Okay, now the Gemara is going to give us medical advice. Over the course of yesterday's daf, the Gemara is going to give us medical advice. Medical advice in terms of, from its perspective of what it knew medicine was. This is not a modern phenomenon, not the last 100, 200 years, but somewhere in the ballpark of the last 1,500 years, last 1,000 years, okay, for the last millennia. So we were cautioned by our rabbis not to follow the medical advice of the Gemara. Okay? In other words, we're going to see a lot of, today's daf is a great example, where we're going to see a lot of medical advice that's given. So we've been cautioned, the Gaonim already, meaning prior to the Rishonim, already told us, don't follow the medical advice of the Gemara. There's a principle that we generally say, Nishana Teva. Nature has changed. The laws of biology has changed. Anatomy has changed. In other words, it's not going to work. It's not going to be effective. And all that's going to happen is we're going to try it. It's not going to work. And obviously, it's going to call into question other things that are said in the Gemara. So
I heard something very beautiful about this. I said that Hashem decides what the refuah works at what time.
Right.
So, now the medicine works.
Right.
At that time, the devash was working.
Correct. So, and so fine. And so we're going to see. So, I'll go through it quickly, obviously, that I'm not going to have anything intelligent to add to it, but that's a great story coming up as well. Okay, let's go. Tanur Rabbanan. Meishach so bolmos machin also devash v'chol menei misika. If somebody is suffering from bolmos, so he's eaten, so you give him sweet foods, literally honey. And chol menei misika, and any sweet food, and me'irin me'orin nafshal adam. and it enlightens the person. Again, enlighten over here, I mean literally, meaning it brings him back to his senses. And the Gemara points out, I don't have a pasuk that says so explicitly, but I got something close. Yonasan, when he's eating the honey, so he says, "Oh my gosh, this is fantastic!" Right? They were fighting a war, and Shaul said, "No one's allowed to eat," and Yonasan, his son, did eat. And okay, the story in Shmuel Aleph. But anyway, but what does he say after he eats the honey? He says, "Ruuna ki oru einai, my vision is sharper. My senses are crystallized." So the Gemara says, "Amayaf apishem ra'ala davar." So the Gemara says that's a pretty good pasuk in Navi that speaks about how sweet foods really sharpen your senses. So the Gemara says, "No, hasam lav bomos achse." No, because Yonasan wasn't suffering from bomos, meaning he was in good shape. It just happens to have been that it sharpened his senses, and now what the Gemara is telling us is it does better than just sharpen your senses. Meaning, even if you're suffering from bulimus, which is a critical condition, it'll help you there as well. Abaye adds to the medical advice, and Abaye says, eat the sweet foods only after you ate basic food. But don't start with the sweet food. The Gemara takes us to the end of Shmuel Aleph, where they brought an Egyptian over to David, and they give him bread, and water, and after giving him the staple foods of bread and water, then they gave him sweet foods, dates and raisins, and he ate and resuscitated. He hasn't gone eaten for 3 days and three nights. So again, so Rabbi says, you see from here, that even when giving masika for sweet foods, but only after the staple foods. Rav Nachum quotes Shmuel. Shmuel was the doctor of the Gemara. I don't know about the doctor, but in other words, we know he was a physician. And Shmuel was everything. He was a physician, he was an astronomer, he was a Talmid Chacham, he was the head of a yeshiva, he was a whole package. So Rav Nachman quotes his Rebbe Shmuel, and he says that if somebody's suffering from bulmos, so you give him the fatty tail of an animal, of a sheep, and with honey. Rav Huna bereid Rav Yishu Amar Avsolos Nikiya B'dvash. Fine flour together with honey. Rav Papa Amar Afilu Kamche Desir B'divsha. Barley together with honey. Amar Rav Yochanan Pamachat Achzani Bulmos V'ratzi L'mizrach Shel Teina. Rav Yochanan says, one time I was suffering from bulmos, and what I do, I went to a fig tree and I ate the figs, but I was even smarter than that. I went to the east side of the fig tree. And I'm right, Rav Yochanan, it wasn't bragging, just simply stating, because of my wisdom, because of my smarts, I was able to survive. Didn't he, Rav Yosef, let's say you want to taste fig, but not just eating fig, but you want to taste the best fig. So what do you do? Yifne lemizracha. Go to the east side of the tree. Eat the fig on the east side of the tree. Shenemar mimegit tvo shamish. What's so great about the east side of the tree? Sun. It's right. It's sun grown figs. Right. The pasuk Gemara quotes the pasuk from Vezor Sabracha. Mimegit tvo shamish. When the sun ripens it, it's delicious. It's beautiful. Rav Yehuda, Rav Yosi have a kaz lebeorche. The Gemara tells the story of Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosi. They were walking together. Ach lebolmos le Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yehuda now suffering from bulmus. So, kapche leroe achle lerifta. So what does he do? So he goes to a shepherd, takes bread right out of his hands and eats it. Okay, and pays him back. All right, big discussion. No? We're not going to have it right now. I apologize. But big discussion. Can I steal food in order to save my life? Okay, this is a story that's telling, although I don't know what it's telling. Meaning, did he reimburse him? Did he not reimburse him? Not clear from the Gemara. But anyway, so Rav Yehuda took food and ate it, and ate the bread. Amalei Rav Yosi kapachtas arawa. So Rav Yosi says, you stole from the shepherd. So again, unclear from the Gemara, it was okay what he did, not okay what he did. And if it's not okay, then it's strange. What a strange conclusion. Meaning Rav Yosi was reprimanding him for trying to save his own life. And what avera was he violating? Geneva, which is an avera. Okay, whatever. It's a big discussion. So kimat l'masei achzei bolmes l'Rav Yosi. Now when they get to the town, so Rav Yosi now suffers from bolmes. Ahaju belagev itzi. Now they're in the town. Rav Yossi is suffering from bulmas, and everyone in the town is in a panic. Rav Yossi, right, the leader of the generation, gadol hador, and so everyone's now bringing food over to Rav Yossi. So I'm like Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda kind of like smiling, right? The Gemara doesn't say that, but I see it. I see the smile. Rav Yehuda smiling at Rav Yossi says, "Ani kabach tisaro." Look, when I was suffering from bulmas, so I just took food from one person. But ata kapach tiser kulo. But you're taking food from the whole city. Now, understood that they're giving him the food, they're providing him the food, but basically Rav Yehuda says to Rav Yossi, now you understand? Right? This is a very serious condition, and not that simple that what I did was incorrect. All right, that's story number one. The Gemara now is going to give us story number two. We are going to go off on a tangent until the bottom of the Amud, really, in which the Gemara is going to talk about the importance of a name. We just told the story of Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yossi. The Gemara now is going to tell us another story of Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yossi. Vesu Rav Meir, Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi, have a kaasle beorche. They were walking together, Rav Meir, have a daik bishma. Now, Rav Meir investigated people's names. Now, that means as follows, and it'll be clear from the Gemara, that basically when someone told him his name, Rav Meir thought about the name and basically assigned a personality to the person simply based on his name. So Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi, Lava Daik Bishma, Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi, they didn't practice this idea of examining people's names. So they're traveling, they're stopping by an inn, by a hotel, and Yavu Luhu, so they go to a particular innkeeper. Amru lo mashimcha. So they say to this particular innkeeper, what's your name? Amru lo Kidor. So that his name is Kidor. He says, my name is Kidor. Amar, this is Rav Meir talking, Shma mina adam rashahu. He's got to be a bad guy. With a name like Kidor, got to be a bad guy. Shenemar Kidor ta'apochas hema. Right, quotes the Pasuk from, again, going back to Vezosa Bracha. No, I think it has Zinu. Anyway, Dor ta'apochas hema. They are a mixed up generation. Right, and it's encrypted, meaning key door in the pasuk is two words, and the man's name was Kidor, and Rav Meir put the two together. Oh, he's a bad guy. So Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi, Ashlam Aleik Kisayah. Now they're staying there for Shabbos, and Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi entrust him, the innkeeper, with their wallet. Rav Meir lo Ashlam Aleik Kisayah. Now Rav Meir did not give him his wallet. So Azul Usterlei Bekivra Davua. Over Shabbos, he hid his wallet. Best hiding place in the world? Cemetery. So he hides the wallet now in the cemetery. Now, the cemetery apparently was in the backyard of the inn, of the hotel. And he placed it on the headstone of the father of the innkeeper, father, of course, being deceased. Now, Friday night, they go to bed. And the innkeeper's father approaches the innkeeper in a dream. And he says, Tashako kisa demana charesha du gavro. And the father in the dream tells the innkeeper, the wallet's on my head. Meaning, go to the cemetery and look at my head and you'll see the wallet. Now the next morning they're waking up, it's Shabbos morning, right? They're sitting down and the innkeeper is serving them, and the innkeeper says to Rabbi Meir, you're not going to believe what happened last night. I had a dream. And in my dream I saw my father, and he told me that there's a wallet on top of my head, meaning go to my tombstone. So I'm relay chamad debe shimsha leis be mamasha. So Rav Meir says to the innkeeper, "Oh, you had a dream on Friday night. Forget about all your dreams on Friday night. Your dreams on Friday night don't mean anything." Now that in of itself, of course, is fascinating. Dreams on Friday night don't mean anything. So Rashi says correct. The Gemara says correct, but Rashi explains. Mitoch, I'm reading Rashi. Mitoch she'adam b'menucha, because on Shabbos you are calm, relaxed, resting. And so therefore, you have the chance on Shabbos to dream. And then those dreams don't mean anything. It's just simply because you're in such a relaxed state. Now, Rav Meir was saying that because he really means it, maybe. But really, he was saying that to save his wallet. I mean, he was trying to tell the innkeeper, the nonsense dream you had. And then what did Rav Meir do? He ran to the cemetery. But it was Shabbos. He's not going to pick up his wallet on Shabbos. Ran to the cemetery, and the Gemara tells us, Azra Meir, Vinatri Kula Yoma. So he spent the rest of Shabbos at the cemetery, watching over his wallet. We just saw a couple days ago, right? Remember the farmers on Yom Kippur? They waded through water in order to make sure that the field is protected. You could do that. You're allowed to watch a field, in this case, watch a wallet, right? You can't pick it up. It's Muktzah. But to watch it, it's fine. Vaisa, Lamachra Amrullahav Lankisan. Okay. So that's Rav Meir. Rav Meir was able to protect his own wallet. Good. Now we move to the other Tanayim. Right? I mean, who was together with Rav Meir? Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. So they now, at the end of Shabbos, they're ready to move on. So they're leaving the inn. Amrullahav Lankisan. So they say to the innkeeper, okay, no. Can we have our wallets back? Amrullu Lohayu Dvar Me Olam. And Kidur said, what wallets? I'm the Rameir, I'm my Lord, the actor Bishmai. So Rameir now reprimands his friends, Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda. Right? Giving them an I told you so. Well, this is not a fair I told you so. Because the truth of the matter is, Rameir didn't say anything. Rameir just heard the man's name and arrived at the conclusion that he wasn't a good man. Rameir did not share this information with Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi. So this is not really an I told you so, but you should have. What should you have done? You should have done the same thing I did. You heard the name Kidor, and the warning should have gone off in your head. So, Amarlo di Akta Bishma, why weren't you careful about his name? Amarle Amarlo Amarlan. So Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Huda reprimand Rabbi Meir. Well, why didn't you tell us? Meaning you knew to be cautious. How come you didn't share that information with us? So Amarlohu, Amadam Riana Chashasha. So the Gemara says, look, this idea of investigating a person's name and arriving at conclusions, no. Don't arrive at a conclusion, but be cautious. In other words, you hear somebody's name and it's not a good name, so don't say he's a bad guy. What you should say is, could be a bad guy. I should be careful. You should be choshesh. But I'm not going to conclude that he's a bad guy. So Mashkuvai Lechanusa. Okay, so now Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda are going to try to get the wallets back. So here's what they do. The rest of the story. So they took him to the store, the innkeeper. Chazu tapache asefame. And while taking him while walking through the marketplace, they see the innkeeper, and he's got lentils on his mustache, meaning that his wife served him lentils. So now Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda go back to the innkeeper's wife and say to the innkeeper's wife, look, the innkeeper took our wallets and he told us to tell you to give us back our wallets. And just in case you don't believe me, they told him, we know, in other words, he told us a secret just to make sure that you would know that he really talked to us. You served them lentils as a last meal. She's like, oh, really? Okay, fine. So she went and she got the wallets, and she gave the wallets back to Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda, and they went off on their way. Vishaklu likisayu va'aisu. So they took the wallets and they went on the way. Azal ihu. So now Kidur comes home, and his wife said, okay, just like you told me, I gave the wallets back to the gentleman. So Kidur says to his wife, nothing. Not only does he not say anything to his wife, Katle Lisa say, he kills her. Okay, well, I mean, it's only right. she did give the wallet back. Okay, Hainu did not, and the Gemara says, and there are two known stories throughout the Gemara, like two very well-known stories. I don't know. It's a good question. Unknown. Hainu ditnan, maim rishonim ha'achilu basar chazir, maim achronim margus ha'nefesh. You know, you got to be careful about maim rishonim, maim achronim. Maim rishonim, because somebody wasn't careful about maim rishonim, he ate pork. And because a person wasn't careful about maim achronim, so it caused the death. Now, the second half of this braisa, we know. Meaning, we just went through the entire story in the Gemara. So now we know, we get it. What is the Mayim Achronim? That's Kidur. If Kidur would have been more careful about washing his hands and washing his face, and by the way, it says Mayim Achronim, clearly it also means you have to wash your mouth as well. Had he been careful about that, then he never would have had an issue sounds that way. Agreed. It's a fair argument. So he should have been more careful about that. And had he been more careful, again, the Gemara is not endorsing any of his behavior. I mean, it's obvious. So the Gemara is not condoning anything he did, right? But if he would have been more careful, by my machronim, he never would have killed his wife. Okay, and all of the sofa v'daik. I'm sorry. And the first half of the brayso, you know, because somebody wasn't careful about my machronim, he ate pork. What is the Gemara talking about? The Gemara just kind of drops that without explaining it. So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi goes and explains that it's a reference to another story, another well-known story in the Gemara. Rashi doesn't tell us where this Gemara is to be found. Okay, right. I'm looking at the side right now, right? It's in Chulin. Or anyway, but basically, it was a particular store owner who sold kosher and non-kosher. To Jews, he sold kosher, and to non-Jews, he sold non-kosher. Okay, it's a strange scenario. I can't imagine the local Ashkachas were happy with him, or whatever. It's not, neither here nor there. Anyway, a guy comes into the store. He doesn't wash his hands, and so therefore, the only conclusion the store owner was, oh, he's not Jewish. He didn't wash his hands, and so he fed him non-kosher. And so the Gemara says because he wasn't careful about his mayim rishonim. Over the sofa v'daika b'shma, but the Gemara says lesson learned, Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yossi learned the lesson for a mayor. When they hear a name, right, they think about it. So Bala. So they got to a particular house, and the homeowner's name was Bala or Bila. Lo Ailu Ligabe. They wouldn't even walk in. Thank you very much. No, thank you. We have somewhere else to go. Amru Shmamina Rasha, who with a name like Bila, he's got to be a bad guy. And they quote it, but the Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yecheskel, and then in the parentheses also Kamo Acharib Losi Haisalina Adnaklamar Zachna Bini Ufim. In other words, the pasuk in Yecheskel is describing somebody who was just a lascivious man engaged in immoral. Sexually illicit behavior, and it just worn out from that kind of behavior, and the pasuk in Yecheskel is Libila Ne'ufim. So if your name is Bila, you cannot be a good person. And Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi ran away. Misha Nashko Kalev Shotev. Okay, so it's logged off, and we haven't even started yet. Okay, you get bitten by a mad dog. So, Tana Rabbanan Chamisha Dvarim Nemru BeKalav Shoteh. Five things that you're gonna see in a mad dog. So, Piv Patuach, the mouth is open. Reiro Notef, saliva coming out of the mouth. Basically, what we envision a mad dog would look like. Ve'aznav Suruchos, the ears instead of sticking up, kind of flop down. Znava Munacha Yakosav, the tail instead of sticking out, kind of like hangs below his legs. Or Mahach Betzid Derachim, doesn't walk in the middle of the road, but kind of like. What, like teetering off the sides of the road, right? You know, almost like a drunk stupor. Some say also that he barks, but you can't hear what he's saying. So, and the Gemara says, how does the dog become rabid? How do we get to the point of a mad dog? So, Rav Amar Nashim Kashvanios, Misachos Bo Shmuel Amar, Ruach Rosh Orelov. So, we have a Machok, Shin Rav, and Shmuel. Both metaphysical explanations in terms of how the dog becomes mad. Rav says, the witches are playing with the dogs, casting spells on the dogs, and so therefore, kishuf, magic. And Shmuel says, ruch ra. Shmuel says, no, the dog is gripped by a spirit, by a what we would call a demon. Okay, so my bein, now the Gemara says, okay, now practically speaking, what difference does it make? Meaning, whichever explanation you go with, you should avoid such a dog. So the Gemara says, Ikabanayu lemikdalei bedavar hanizrak. So the Gemara says, no, it makes a difference. Because you want to kill the dog. Either way, you want to kill the dog. The dog is bad, and it's dangerous. And the Gemara said, the Mishnah told us that if you're bitten by such a dog, so you do whatever you need to do in order to save such an individual. So it's bad news. How do you kill it? So according to Shmuel, you kill it from a distance. You don't kill it close up. Because again, the issue is the Ruach Ra. Rashi explains when you have a Ruach Ra, so you don't even want to get close to the Ruach Ra. So you take an arrow, you take a stick, you take a stone, you throw it at the dog, you kill it from a distance, but you don't get up to it right up there and kill it with your hands. If it was just Kisha, if it was just magic, so that's not going to affect you. Even if you kill the dog straight out, that would be fine. But according to Shmuel, you must kill it from a distance. Tanya Kavasi de Shmuel, the Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting Shmuel, Kisha Harginoso, Ein Harginoso, Ala B'davar and Nizrak. So you must kill it at a distance. Dechayev Bey Mistakein. Now, if such a dog rubs up against you, you're in serious danger. And denachis lay mayas. Now, if he bites you, you're going to die. Okay, so, dechai ve mistake in the Gemara. Now, we are going to be discussing for some time now, we're going to be discussing almost for a good part of this Amud, again, medical advice given by the Gemara in terms of how to deal with being bitten or being rubbed up against by a rabid dog. So, my takante nishlach mane venere. So, if you're rubbed up by such a dog, throw your clothes down and run away. Rav Huna, bered Rav Yeshua, chafe echad minayu b'shuka. So, Rav Huna got rubbed up by a mad dog in the market. Shalchin lamane, he threw down his clothing. And I guess the Gemara's point is, of course, he suffered embarrassment by doing so, but saving his life is more important. V'rahid. Amar kiyamti b'asmei chachmati techaya ba'ala. Second time we quote the pasuk in Koheles. I was smart and therefore I survived. Denachis lomayes. If you get bitten by such a dog, you're going to die. My takante. So the Gemara says you're going to die, but it's possible. You'll see. The Gemara is going to provide a medical solution. Some solution coming up. Amar Abayi Nesi Mashcha de Apa de Dichra. So the Gemara says take the skin of a male cat. Right, it's a certain type of cat. V'nichtav aleha, and what you do after you have the skin of such a cat is you write down the following on the skin. By the way, I noted very often when the Gemara provides medical advice, Abaye is the one who's providing this advice, and the Gemara often tells us, the Gemara doesn't say it over here, but he learns the advice from his foster mother. His foster mother was what we would call a nurse practitioner. She knew a lot of things. So Abayu is often the one giving us such medical advice. So v'nichtav aleha, and you write the following down now on the hide of the cat. Ana panah panasa amashcha de apa dechra kasivna. I am so and so. I'm writing on the skin of a cat. Allah kasivna alach. Kanti kiloris. These are incantations. Ve'armele kanti kiloris. Another version of the incantation. Kaka Hashem tzvakos amen selah. So this is part of the incantation that you write down the skin. Take off your clothing, bury the clothing for 12 months. Shasa, a full year. Then dig it up and burn it in an oven. Vinid barinu lekantme aparshas derachim. Take the ashes and sprinkle the ashes over the crossroads. V'hanach treisay yachishas akir shasa mayin lalishela beguvta denachsha. And during those 12 months, when you drink from the water, drink using a copper straw. Dilmachazi bevoad deshid v'listakin. Because perhaps you're going to look in the water and see a reflection. And I'll just observe that a number of times the Gemara cautions us about looking at reflections. The Gemara was, how do I say this? Anti-reflection in general. And so the Gemara says over here, now that you are in such a tender and delicate state, you for sure should not look at your reflection. Drink water through a straw so that you avoid looking at a reflection. Ki hada abba bar marta, hu abba bar min yume avdalei ime gufta d'dahava. And the Gemara tells us the story of Abba Bar Marta, who his mother prepared for him a straw made out of gold, so he drinks through the straw so he doesn't have to look into the water to see a reflection.
Hydrophobia, one of the things on the radio. Hydrophobia is one of the descriptions on the radio.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You'll explain it to him after. V'od Amar Rav Masya. Rav Yochanan Chashbit Safidna. Rav Yochanan suffering from Safidna. Okay, it sounds like from the Gemara, and again, this is not a diagnosis, it's a suggestion, it's a guess on my part. It sounds like something like scurvy. Okay, it's definitely some sort of, it's some sort of illness that comes in the mouth area, and basically, it is, okay, you'll see, the Gemara is going to describe this in length. So he goes to a woman who was basically a physician. So, Avdalei Milsa Chamshe Umale Shabasa. So she mixes her medicines, and she gives him to take on Thursday and on Friday. So Amalei b'Shabbos Mai. So he goes, okay, good. I need you to prepare for me for Shabbos. Now, you're not going to be with me on Shabbos, so you know what? Just give me the secret formula. Not a big deal. So Amalei lo tzrichas. So she says to him, don't worry, you're not going to need it. You'll be fine. Well, 2 days of this and you'll be fine. So I mitzarchina mai. So he says, yeah, but what if I do need it? Rav Yochanan was Jewish. So what if I do need it? So Amalei shtavali delam igles. So she says to him, okay, I'll give you the secret formula. Swear to me you won't tell anybody. Ishtabala la di Yisrael lo megalina. So he says, he made a shvua. I won't reveal the secret. You'll tell me the compound for the treatment for my tzafidna, and I will not reveal the secret. Nafak darsha bepirka. And then the next day he gets up, he's Rav Yochanan, he's darshaning, he's giving the sermon, the Shabbos sermon, he's speaking to the entire congregation, and over the course of the sermon, what does he do? He reveals the secret of the compound. The Gemara says, yeah, but he swore that he wouldn't do it. So the Gemara says, so then the Gemara goes off on a technicality. And the Gemara says, yeah, you know, he swore that he wouldn't tell the God of Israel. Okay, I didn't tell the God of Israel. I told the people of Israel. So nafak drasha bepirka. I'm sorry, what just happened? I ran over the same line again. Fine. Sorry. Okay, so again, he gets off on a technicality. So the Gemara says, okay, but when all is said and done, that's a technicality. In other words, we understand that she thought that he swore, that what he basically was swearing was, I'm not going to tell anybody. And he told everybody. Mm-hmm. And yes, technically speaking, you can answer and you can explain, yeah, but if you listen carefully to my shvua, I'm really okay. No, you're not, the Gemara says. You're not really okay. That's Chilah Hashem. You desecrated God's name. You provided Chilah Hashem. So the Gemara says, so how did Rav Yochanan do that? So the Maglilei Mi'ikara. So the Gemara says, right after he made the Shvuah, he said to her, I said the words, but I'm not holding by it. And he told her right away. So now, granted, even as we get to this stage of the Gemara, I'm not totally sure how to fully understand this, how to digest this. Meaning, because essentially, even though he made a shvu, he basically says, I'm now going to renege. Right. Maybe, Danny, that's a good suggestion. Maybe it was talk to the Dibor. I'm not saying that I'm totally comfortable with the punchline of the Gemara, but...
It can be talk to the Dibor because he swore and then she explained to him, so that's like a while for him to explain.
Again, it's... But I think certainly the bigger point, however, we walk away with is the point of Chilah Hashem, meaning the Gemara acknowledges. It's even though it's technically okay, but if you're desecrating God's name, the Gemara says that's terrible. Okay, and somehow in this particular case it's okay. I say this often. I really sincerely believe this to be true. There's more behind the story, meaning the Gemara gives us some information, but sounds like in this particular case. I'm just going to finish up over here. I know we're over time. Just let me just finish up the actual. Okay, what was the secret? How do you cure the tzfidna? So my avdalei. So what'd she do? So Amar Vachabrei de Rav Ami Mezor Shem and Zayis Umelach. So yeast water together with olive oil and salt. Rav Yehemar Amar Sor Gufei. No, the yeast itself. Shem and Zayis Umelach together with oil and salt. Rav Ashi Amar Mashcha de Gadfa de Ivza. The fat of a goose. Amar Abayanav de Lukul Velo Yistaye. So Abaye says, look, I tried it all. It didn't work. Ad Amar Le'ahu Taya. But I did speak to an Arab and he told me, Aisu kashisa de zesa, make sure to get the pits of the olives, the lomalu tilsa, that are not ripe, and kalina benura, and bake them in an oven, burn them in an oven. Amara charata, right over a new shovel, the idbik bikave dare, and put them on your teeth. Avdihachi, he did that, the idstay, and he was totally healed. Mi mai hava. how do you get to this point in to begin with? Meaning, what leads us to the condition of Tzafidna? Mechamim mechamim adechite umishiyur kasa daharsana. So the Gemara says, by eating hot wheat bread, and by eating old fish. Umaisimanei, and how do you know that you have this condition of Tzafidna? So the Gemara says, Kadrami midi bekavi, when you put something on your teeth, the asadama mi beidari, and basically all your teeth are bleeding. That is how you know that you have this condition of Tzafidna, to which the Gemara says it is necessary, even on Shabbos, to take medicine in order to heal yourself from such a condition. Okay. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up.